And welcome into the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Fellas, what's going on? Joe Rex Road, how we doing?
Doing great. How's Robbie Stanley doing?
Robbie Stanley is doing phenomenal on this Tuesday morning. Ryan Porth, what in the world's going on? How are you?
Thanks to your Miami Heat last night, I'm feeling pretty good.
Get you a little parlay action in last night on the FanDuel Sportsbook?
A little bit.
Very nice.
A little bit.
You know, the Oklahoma City Thunder, not great this year.
They are not. And took advantage of that.
And the Miami Heat last night wore a uniform that had two colors on it.
Yeah, they should never wear them again.
Half of it was pink, half of it was blue.
Never wear those again.
Wasn't great. Did not like it. Joe Rexroad, we were talking yesterday, obviously, about the Titans, their big win against the Texans. But now that we can look ahead to the game against the Ravens and the playoff bracket in the AFC, how do we think that this is shaken out for the Titans? Because you look at it, obviously the alternative would have been going to Buffalo, now Indianapolis going to Buffalo since the Titans won the division. You've got the Pittsburgh-Cleveland matchup with the 3-6, which I just think is a really interesting game in the AFC. And then, of course, the Titans and the Ravens in the 4-5. You know, I think if you look at it, all the number one seeds win. So, you know, 2, 3, and 4 win this weekend. The favored teams in terms of seeding is concerned. The Titans would end up going to Kansas City. You know, we'll see what happens. I think there's a decent chance that Cleveland could beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. But how do you think that this bracket has shaken out for the Titans just based on the matchup in the first round and what we could potentially see from there?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you had to hand pick a team to play, I'd probably go with the Steelers. Even though, you know, obviously they showed a lot of life in the second half of that Colts game, but they've not been trending well and they're really banged up. But it's not bad because I agree with you. I think that, you know, the Browns have a shot here, and obviously if that's the case, then you could, if you beat the Ravens, you know, then you would not necessarily have to go to Kansas City. Now, of course, that would mean you'd get to go to Buffalo probably.
Right.
So it's not like it's some big treat. You know, either way, you win this game, you're probably going to one of those two places, unless somehow the Colts also pull off the shocker, in which case, then all of a sudden, gosh, you've got a home game in the divisional round. I guess you've got a home game against the Browns, right? Yeah. You got a home game against the Browns. If both of the low seeds win, you know, it's, I mean, I've said for a while, it's like Chiefs avoidance is key. So I think it sets up for that as a possibility. If the Titans can win Sunday, problem is right now avoiding the Chiefs and getting the Bills. I mean, I still would prefer that. You know, if I were a team in this league, I would prefer the Bills to the Chiefs. And I know the Chiefs haven't been playing great and all that stuff, but, you know, we know what the Chiefs are. But, you know, it's not great. Obviously, they were Sam Sloman doink away from just being in Buffalo right away and really being in a tough spot. So it's not bad. You know, I do like the reseeding aspect of the NFL playoffs. And so that's obviously you don't have a straight bracket to follow. You know, I think it'll be interesting too. You know, what does it mean? Sometimes, you know, the team gets the bye like the Ravens got last year and it hurts them. I mean, I think that was a factor, one of many factors in the Titans going into Baltimore and winning. Obviously, the Chiefs get the rest, but they also have this downtime, and you know, maybe you lose a little bit of rhythm, a little bit of chemistry.
It is amazing to look at the AFC this year. I mean, I don't know how many years typically in the playoffs where you look around and think, okay, that team, they're not very good. I'd like to play them. I mean, you're a playoff team. Generally speaking, you're a pretty good team if you get in the playoffs, unless you're in the NFC East this year. But I look around. I mean, obviously, 11-5 teams. The Colts are 11-5. The Browns are 11-5. They're your 7-6 seeds in the AFC. The Titans 11-5 winning the division. I mean, there's not a slouch in this entire playoff group. Like, the Steelers are trending the wrong way, and they haven't been playing very well. But still, that defense gives them a chance to win every game that they're going to play in. I mean, I know Roethlisberger hasn't been good as of late, but I just look around the AFC as a whole, And there's not one team in the playoffs where I'm just like, you know what? I think I'd really love to play them. I you can kind of pick and choose who you'd rather play, but there's no team where if you're the Titans, you're like, you know what? I feel great playing this team.
Exactly. No, it's crazy. I mean, to have your, you know, again, you expand to 7 and you're 7 to 11 to 5. Meanwhile, I'd be A-OK playing the Bears of the Washington football team.
Yes.
And this, I mean, gosh, maybe even, I mean, I still like the Rams, but boy, they look pretty bad lately offensively. They're a solid team, though. But, I mean, there's two over there that you'd be fine playing. So it is wild. Another wild thing, you know, there were no 9-7 teams in the entire NFL this year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like the Titans stopped getting 9-7 records, and all of a sudden everybody stopped seeing
it.
I mean, there's
broke the curse for the whole league.
I did not know that.
That's what this league is. It's 9-7, man. It's wild. I'd like to know if that's the first time ever.
They
went to 16.
I never remember a team not being 9-7 in the league. I mean, the Bears had a chance. They were 8-7. They had a chance going in the weekend. They couldn't get it done against the Packers. But that's crazy.
Did they though?
No, they didn't. They really didn't. That offense is not good. But it is like the Titans just, you know what? We've been 9-7 for 4 years in a row, whatever. They just broke the curse for the entire league. The Titans have done the entire NFL a favor.
Yeah, there's going to be 11 9-7 teams next year now. So
thank you.
Going to make up for it.
We just totally screwed that over for the rest of the league there. This matchup for the Titans against the Ravens, as you look at it, the opening line, it's now at 4.5 for the Ravens, so more money coming in on the Ravens side of things right now in terms of being the favorite in this game on Sunday. But if the Titans are able to get it done, I don't know. You talk about the Bills and the Chiefs. I would agree with you probably that still Kansas City is the number one team I don't want to see if you're the Titans in the playoffs. But the way the Bills have been playing lately, it's close. I mean, that Miami defense is pretty good. And they just hung up 56 on them on Sunday. Josh Allen, that Bills offense is playing pretty well. So I think you're almost splitting hairs there if you're the Titans based on your defense. It's not going to matter a whole lot, I don't think. Going up against Buffalo or Kansas City, you're going to have your challenges stopping those teams offensively. But I don't know. The way Buffalo's rolling right now, I don't know if anybody wants any part of them.
Yeah, now a lot of those points were put up by Matt Barkley, right?
Yeah,
It doesn't mean, you know. I mean, it was just a complete my gosh, Miami. Such a good season, nice surprising season. They got a chance and they just go in there and, I mean, talk about an egg. That's a goose egg that they laid. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the Bills look good. There is a little psychology, I would say, the psychology is a little better probably going to Kansas City. If you're the Titans, you were there last year for the AFC title game. Here's your shot. If you win this game, you get to just go take a shot at them. Again, them coming off the bye.
Yeah.
So, maybe you can. I mean, they haven't been in sync anyway lately. So I can see that. Whereas, obviously you trashed the Bills the one time you played them this year, and they played terrible. I mean, you played well, but they played terrible, turning the ball over. So maybe there's a little bit of a psychology difference in your favor if you get Kansas City. I mean, either one of those things would be very tough. I mean, if you get to that point and win this game, I don't know what that means. I mean, obviously this season was about getting at least to as far as you got last year and trying to take another step. But I would say there's a little bit of a, house money kind of feel if you get past this week. And you got, just go see what you can do. And in either of those cases, and in this case this week, your offense is going to have to be great.
And speaking of Kansas City, let's introduce our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Who would be your pick to win the Super Bowl in February? Are you taking the Kansas City Chiefs? Are you taking the Green Bay Packers? Or are you taking the rest of the field in the NFL playoffs? 40 votes so far, so very early in the voting process. 60% in the early returns going with the field, 20% with the Chiefs, and 20% with the Green Bay Packers. So this is going to be an interesting one, Joe, to see how it goes about throughout the rest of the show. I think for the most of the year, people would say Kansas City. Like if I gave you a choice between Kansas City and the field in week 13, I think a lot of people are taking Kansas City in that poll. I'm interested to see how this ends up shaking out the rest of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I do feel like there's a little, you know, there's a little less certainty, which I get, over Kansas City, just because of the way they've been playing. I'm having a hard time buying that. I think frankly they've almost looked bored a little bit.
Yeah.
Late season here, they knew they were going to get the one, and you know they just haven't had the intensity. I think you get them in the playoffs with everything at stake again, and we're going to see what they really are. But that's enough to put a little doubt in. And hey, the Packers look good. The Packers look awfully good, and the fact that someone's going to have to go up there and win in that place, even though it's not going to have fans or very many fans in it, that's still a daunting task.
It is, but look at the field. You've got Buffalo, you've got New Orleans, you've got your boys Tampa Bay Buccaneers down there with old man Tom Brady leading the way, 40 touchdowns as a 43-year-old quarterback. There's some intriguing options in the rest of the field.
For sure, and I think the field, I think Buffalo especially, that's the trendy hot team for people to look at. And it's, you know, you mentioned New Orleans, not a lot of people talking about them.
Yeah.
And it's just hard because we just haven't seen the whole thing together much. And frankly, I have not heard anything in the last day or two exactly about where Michael Thomas is, but he's supposed to be back, is my understanding.
Yep.
You know, that's still a good defense. And if you get it, you get him going, that's a different offense. And they can absolutely, I kind of feel like that's what we're going to be seeing in Lambeau for the right to go to Tampa.
It very well could be, and that will be another interesting matchup of old quarterback. A lot of old quarterbacks in the NFC when you look around the picture of it. Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, old quarterbacks galore. So going to be interesting to see.
Alex Smith
as well. Yeah, you're right. Going to be interesting to see how that plays out. When we come back, the Titans have made the playoffs for the third time in the past four seasons. How have they gotten to this point where they've established themselves as a perennial playoff contender? We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. So the Titans have made the playoffs for the third year in the last 4 years, and they've established themselves as a perennial contender in the last 4 or 5 years under Mike Vrabel / Mike Mularkey and John Robinson and this team. So my question to you, Joe Rexrode, is when you factor in what it was like with the Titans in the past decade, going from Mike Munchak to Ken Whisenhunt and trying to find the quarterback, drafting Marcus Mariota, being one of the worst teams in the NFL, how have they turned it around and gotten to this point where they're a perennial playoff contender on a seemingly year-by-year basis? Like, what do you think was the first step in the process for them to get here?
Well, I mean, look, I think the obvious place to go is the change in ownership, and obviously Amy Adams Strunk coming in for Tommy Smith and, hiring John Robinson. They decided to keep Mike Mularkey, which was a pretty controversial decision. But, you know, I mean, Mularkey did some good things. Now, if you want, you can go back and you can look at some picks from the previous regime that still matter. I mean, Taylor Lewan, there aren't a lot, you know, but there were some foundational guys who I thought had a lot to do with that 2016 season turnaround, such as, Lewan, but Brian Arakpo, Derek Morgan, Jarrell Casey, without question, Delanie Walker, without question. They had some guys who formed the, you know, who were there for the terrible years, you know, who were there and still great players for those two teams that went 5-27, who, when John Robinson took over, when Mike Mularkey became coach, they had actually a nice core group. So I think you have to acknowledge them. You can't just say it was crap and then boom, Robinson came in, it was all new players and they were good, because that wasn't the case. The 2016 team largely, you know, leaned on a lot of guys like that. But if you want to talk about a player, I think DeMarco Murray was a huge moment. I think DeMarco Murray, in terms of, you know, not, you know, an excellent player, and he was the best running back in at least the AFC before he hurt his foot late in the 2016 season. He was tremendous. And I think he really brought something to that locker room too. You know, that draft, you've got Jack Conklin is an all-pro as a rookie. You know, your offensive line is way better, like you snap your fingers. Obviously, that was Mariota's best season. I mean, a lot came together. So, I mean, to me, that team is one you look at with, again, guys from before who were great players and leaders. You get some new blood in there. I mean, John Robinson instantly added, you know, Kevin Byard, obviously, in that first draft. Added some pieces. I mean, he made the trade. You know, the that's still one of the best moves he's made is DGB for Dennis Kelly, which, I mean, I know I was like, oh, yeah, really? And I think that was that was probably the kindest reaction to that move. But Dennis Kelly, here he is, still starting at right tackle. So I think you look at that team, but I think if you want to talk about, I mean, the big moments are, you know, Amy Anastrunk, John Robinson. And then I do think that, you know, you've taken another step with the switch from Mularkey to Vrabel. I didn't like that move at the time. You win a playoff game. The players are clearly, you know, campaigning for Mularkey, and you still make that move, but they have taken another step with Vrabel.
I'm glad you brought up DeMarco Murray, because that was a point I was going to go to in this discussion. And I think sometimes it gets overlooked in the evolution of this team and how they've gotten to this point. I think not only did he come in and obviously played really well for the Titans, almost 1,300 yards rushing in his first year, led the AFC, was one of the best players in the AFC that year. I think what he did more than anything was just set a tone and gave the Titans an identity. I remember when John Robinson was hired by the Titans in his introductory press conference, he talked about what he wanted the identity of the team to be. He wanted it to be tough. He wanted it to be physical. They wanted to be able to run the football. And obviously, like, DeMarco Murray, he wasn't putting up the numbers that Derrick Henry is putting up right now in terms of, you know, back-to-back rushing titles and winning, you know, rushing for over 2,000 yards. But I thought DeMarco Murray came in and really changed the tone of this team. Obviously, you know, Marcus had a great year that year too, and everything just felt like it was coming together. But that move specifically was kind of the first step on the field of, I think, the culture legitimately changing, and you could see like something tangibly happening where you're like, okay, this team looks a little different. They feel different. There's some more toughness involved here. And I think when you go back to Robinson's opening press conference of what he wanted this team to be and what he wanted this team to look like from an identity standpoint, I think DeMarco Murray was a huge first step in how they've ultimately gotten to this process.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing with that, again, that team was it was very good up front. And let's also remember Ben Jones. That was another acquisition of John Robinson's in that first offseason, getting him a free agent, you know, had been a good player with Houston. So you bring in Ben Jones, who is definitely a leader on this team, good player up front, and you bring in Conklin, and all of a sudden – and then that was also the year that Taylor Lewan took a big step in terms of, I mean, he still had, you know, some penalties after the whistle and things like that and some moments. And but he took a big step forward in terms of kind of realizing that he could be a great player. So all of a sudden, you're good up front with DeMarco Murray. Also, Derrick Henry, not bad to have him, you know, as a rookie. And he had some, you know, he had some really nice moments as a rookie backup. You know, it was a good combination. And then they were one of the best rush defenses in the league. So they were good at the line of scrimmage instantly. I mean, frankly, they were better. Obviously, they were certainly better, you know, then than they are now in that way, defensively up front. But, yeah, it was, you know, like for me coming in, I looked at this team and I said, how were they 5-27 the past 2 years? I mean, they've got, you know, it's not like it's just a terrible roster, you know, but Robinson did a pretty masterful job in that first offseason of like the swings he took all mattered. And you know, you've got a team that is 8-6 at down near the end with a chance to win the division, of course, ends up 9-7 out of the playoffs, but that's obviously a massive turnaround and that set the tone.
It did, and it's interesting when you look back at the coaching change, because I'm with you. Like, when they fired Mike Mularkey, they moved on from him. You go win the playoff game at Kansas City. You come back, you lose the next week, and all of a sudden Mike Mularkey is out the door. I was like, what are they doing? I mean, do you know how long it's been since this Titans team made the playoffs and won a playoff game, and you're going to sit here and move on from that coach? I was highly critical of it. And then the next year, albeit injuries playing into it, you missed the playoffs, and I was like, okay, well, this is certainly working out for the Titans. This seems like one of the most Titans moves ever, and they're just going backwards at this point. Obviously, it's worked out since then, and I think it's pretty obvious that moving on from Mularkey and bringing Vrabel into the fold has been the right move. What do you think it is about Vrabel that's taken this team to the next level? What do you think he's done to create a culture where, you know, winning at this level has become the new standard for this group?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, look, I respect Mularkey. I think Mularkey did a good job, and I think Mularkey had the respect of the room. I think Vrabel's a little more, it's hard to find the exact word, but personable maybe, a little bit more hands-on. Obviously, we talk about Vrabel in the practice field, you know, but even just hands-on in terms of relationships, that's one thing you hear from guys in the locker room, or you did when we were in the locker room. Like last year, I worked on kind of trying to answer that question, you know, when they got in the playoffs, and got a lot of really interesting responses from people about even going to him with personal problems. You know, guy who's going to, you know, he's fiery on the practice field, very demanding, does not play favorites, doesn't matter, doesn't care if you're a star or not, and all that stuff. But, like, you know, guys feel like they can go to him, talk about stuff. I think relationships are important. You say it with any coach in any, you know, college or pro team, and everybody talks about it. But I think that's a big part of it. I think there's a good feeling between the players and the coaches, and obviously he sets that tone. And then, you know, he came in. I mean, Matt LaFleur was a candidate for this job as well. Matt LaFleur comes in as OC, whether that was all Vrabel or more Robbins or whatever, they brought in LaFleur. And I think LaFleur did some things that then Arthur Smith has, you know, has added to. And I think that's a big part of it too. I think schematically it was a good move. I think that, you know, we saw a team in 16 that winning up front and play action, it was great for Mariota. And then when they weren't as good in 17, You saw some holes in that scheme offensively. And I think that was, you know, I mean, John Robinson basically said to us the day after he fired Mularkey that Mularkey might have kept his job if he fired Terry Robiskie.
Right.
Mularkey's a loyal guy. And, you know, they moved on. But I think that's it too. They've been better at the OC. And I think LaFleur was better, whether people want to acknowledge it or not. But obviously, Arthur Smith has just taken it and run with it.
And then there's the obvious point where you can look tangibly on the field and I think just kind of recognize a pivot point and what turned around. And that's obviously when Ryan Tannehill took over as a starting quarterback. But just thinking back to that move to bring him in the first place, obviously it wasn't working out in Miami. And you had injury concerns about Mariota. And that move to bring Tannehill in here originally as a backup for, I guess, insurance for Mariota if he got hurt, has proved to be one of the greatest moves in the history of this franchise. And we talk about, you know, the struggles that John Robinson had this past offseason, and, you know, obviously with, you know, Clowney and Beasley not working out with the pass rush. But I think back to that move to bring Tannehill in here, that is one of the greatest moves that this town has ever seen, and obviously we're seeing the fruits of it right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. So on Twitter the other day, someone, I think it was after the Isaiah Wilson, you know, video of him, New Year's Eve boat. It's just like, man, what is this kid doing? And so that always starts a round of cut him, cut him, cut him. You know, I'm like, guys, they're not going to cut him right now. I mean, hey, at some point they may have to, but, you know, he's a first round pick. You're not cutting him right now. You're going to see it through all the way. But, you know, people get angry, of course. And I understand, because John Robinson has had a terrible offseason, his worst offseason by a mile, his last offseason. And someone, arguing against John Robinson was like, well, then he gets lucky with Tannehill and all this stuff. It's like, okay, listen, you can say it's lucky, but every move is on your record. Okay.
Yeah.
So that move's on his record. He did it. The bad moves are on his, Vic Beasley's on his record too. You call it luck or not, bottom line is they went out and signed the guy, and you're right. It's just a monstrous move that has changed the trajectory of things, because if they didn't have that alternative last year when they're 2-4 with one of the worst offenses in the league, where do they end up, and what does everything look like at the end of the 2019 season?
What does the staff look like? Like, is Vrabel in trouble right now? Like, is John Robinson still here if they don't make that move and Tannehill takes over? Because I think we forget just how bad it was. Like, they were 2-4, but that offense was putrid. And it was one of the worst offenses that I had seen. That Denver game was just absolutely atrocious. So Tannehill coming in, I mean, it totally changed, I think, the trajectory of not only the franchise, but, you know, Robinson, Vrabel, who knows what we'd be talking about right now if that move didn't work out.
Yeah. Now, of course, you bring Lawan back, and so your offensive line, although he was back by then, you know, I mean, you give a guy a week or two, yep, that offensive line was on its way to being better. And also A.J. Brown last year, kind of a sparingly used rookie early. He had the big play at Cleveland, but as the season went on, it was like, oh, this guy is the real deal. So there are other factors, but yeah, the factor was Tannehill and obviously Derrick Henry. Again, for anyone who thinks it's a one-way street here, go look at Derrick Henry first six games and then last 11 games that nine games that he played of the regular season plus the playoffs last year, you know, with or without Tannehill. Pretty big difference.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ty texts in and says, the Titans have gotten to this point because they've done just enough in three of the 4 years. It's always come down to the last week. To me, that's just the nature of this league. Like, that's what the NFL is. A lot of it's going to come down to the last week. I don't think the Titans should be penalized because they've done just enough to get in the playoffs. I think it's just hard to get in the playoffs in this league, as we found out this year. Going 11-5, it comes down to the last game.
Yeah, I mean, look, you'd love to be 13-1 Kansas City, just knowing that you can just chill the last couple weeks, right? But it's just, for the most part, most teams, you know, the goal is to build a powerhouse. But if you are doing it, if you are making the plays in those games, you can't ask for a whole lot more. You want to be in it, and you want to get in the tournament. And look, in this league, we've seen plenty of times that lower seeds get in the tournament and find something to get going. And we saw the Titans as a six last year, although I don't think they were a six seed quality, but they were a six, and they got to the title game. So yeah, you want – look, the whole idea this last offseason was, okay, you made that run. You got your quarterback. You got your running back. You got a lot of good things. Find a pass rush, and then where do you go? And obviously that the opposite of that has happened.
So now that the Titans have gotten to this point and they've established themselves as a perennial playoff contender, how do you sustain it moving forward? How do you make sure that this is a long-term thing and not something that fades away quickly in today's NFL? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking about the Tennessee Titans, how they've gotten to this point where they've established themselves as a perennial playoff contender in the AFC. And Joe, it's one thing to get to this point and to be able to call yourself a perennial playoff contender. It's another thing to stay at this point. And I don't think anybody is expecting to go on some, like, you know, New England Patriot type run where you're going to the playoffs for basically 20 years in a row and you're competing for Super Bowls seemingly on an every other year basis. But if you're the Titans, now that you've gotten to this point where you have established yourself as a playoff contender every year, how do you stay here? What are the steps necessary for this team in the next 3, 4, 5 years to stay at this point where you're competing for the playoffs every single season?
Yeah, well, the quick answer in this league is always draft really well. I mean, because you have to have good players you can plug in who don't cost a lot at all times. You have to draft well. And again, this is why at this point, and things could change, but at this point, this 2020 draft class is yielding very little. We did see Christian Fulton on the field. We've seen some Darrington Evans. You know, there are guys certainly down the road who could end up mattering a lot. I mean, I think Christian Fulton is going to be, you know, a key part of the secondary moving forward. We'll see how good he is. But you got to draft well. And then, you know, look, who's your quarterback? I mean, the problem in this league is, you know, you have to pay quarterbacks if they're good, and you pay them a ton, and then you can't pay other positions. And, you know, obviously we've seen where, like, the Seahawks, when they're still on Russell Wilson's rookie deal, how loaded they were otherwise. And then if you can get that great young quarterback and have that window where you're not paying him, that's kind of how teams are looking at it. And, man, they are swapping guys out. I mean, I'm amazed here listening to this stuff about Tua right now. Like, the Dolphins might go draft – you know, Justin Fields or something.
It's unbelievable.
The third pick, which they got from Bill O'Brien, by the way. Thanks, Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
But dude, the guy played part of a year, and I thought he looked like a rookie QB to me. So it's crazy in this league. Lewis Riddick had a rant on this yesterday. It was really good. Just like, I mean, you're talking like a guy has a few bad series. They're like, well, maybe it's time for the next guy. I don't know. I mean, it's wild. But regardless, that's how teams are like, can we find that rookie, you know, that we can roll with and build around? And the Titans are not in that spot. But where the Titans are is, I mean, they're paying a quarterback $29.5 million a year, which is awfully good, especially for what they're getting for him. I mean, this is, you know, again, this is where this offseason you have to also take into account the Tannehill and Henry deals. So to me, it's the Tannehill and the Henry window. That's your window right now. I don't think you can think beyond that, you know? I mean, what you have to – in this league, you really have to think, okay, what do we have? What do we know we have next year? And then what can we put around it to make the overall team better? There are going to be a lot of tough choices for this team. But the bottom line is they know that Tannehill right now, four-year deal. And, of course, when he signed it, it was like, well, they can get out after two. Well, they're not going to want to get out after two. No. They're going to want to go all four. And maybe beyond that, the guy is only 32. I think that's one of the exciting things for the Titans. I mean, look around the league. You just mentioned all these old guys who are still really good. Why can't Ryan Tannehill be really good into his late 30s? You know, I think he could. But that's your window. If you look at this team and who's signed, I mean, their offensive line looks to be in pretty good shape. They have to figure out receiver next to A.J. Brown. But I think whether it's signing Davis and making that choice or it's going pretty high in the draft, it is a good draft for receivers. I mean, their offense to me, and I, you know, we're going to talk to Charles Robinson later. You know, Charles Robinson, he and I were texting last night. He's like, yeah, I need to revisit that Arthur Smith opinion I had last week, because he's hearing, you know, a lot of teams that are very interested in Arthur Smith. So you got to be ready for that possibility. But, you know, I mean, look, he came in, everybody's like, what, the tight end coach? What's he going to do, right? I mean, it doesn't mean they can't find a good coordinator. They also got to hire a defensive coordinator, by the way. But, you know, how can you fix the defense for this window so that you have an okay defense to go with that offense? I still think that offense, you know, you look at the offensive line. I mean, they, you know, Kelly is signed for the next couple of years. Ben Jones has another year. Obviously, Nate Davis is really coming on as an excellent player. Saffold, you know, isn't a free agent until 23, Lawan 24. I mean, they are set up front. And that's, I think, one of the most exciting parts about this team moving forward. You know, get that line healthy. And as some of these guys are developing, they could be really good. I do think that you have to think about Ben Jones's replacement here in the short term. But the defense, how do you fix it? I mean, that's the whole thing. Whenever this season ends, what are your choices? Are you going to think about cutting a Malcolm Butler? Are you going to go after signing Jayon Brown? You know, there's some really interesting choices ahead. And then who the heck is rushing the passer for you?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think foundationally, when you've got a quarterback, and obviously the Titans have got one now that they feel pretty good about, you're going to give yourself a chance. I mean, it's not always the case. Obviously, the Texans are learning that firsthand right now. Deshaun Watson, one of the best quarterbacks in the league still, and they just don't have much around him at this point, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But I think you're the Titans. You feel great about your offense moving forward. Maybe it's not quite as lethal as it was this year. I mean, it's a pretty high bar to establish with this Titans offense. But you're right. Like, it all to me comes down in the next couple of years. Can you put a defense around this team, and can you get it back to a level that's serviceable, that you can feel adequate about throwing out there? Like, it's difficult for me to imagine, regardless, like, of who's out there next year and what the pass rush looks like from a personnel standpoint. Like, it's going to be pretty hard to replicate how bad it was this year. Like, it's almost, you feel like it should get better by default next year, and you should end up with more than 19 sacks in the regular season. So that's going to be important. Like, you can't live like this forever if you're the Titans. Like, this defense and how bad it's been, and we'll see, you know, whether or not it burns them in the playoffs. I think a lot of people are suspecting that it will at some point, but You can't live in regular seasons like this all the time and expect to go 11-5. So I'm really fascinated to see what Vrabel and Robinson do when the offseason comes, whenever that may be, in order to try to get this defense built back up to a level where you feel okay about it. And I think maybe the illusion is from, you know, Titans fans looking at it right now that you're far away from doing that based on how bad the defense is. And I certainly understand that thought process, Joe, but I also look at the talent on that defense and some of the players that we know have played at a high level before and wonder, could it be a situation where if you just bring another guy or two in here that's the right fit, you hire a defensive coordinator, could this defense as soon as next year go back to being a defense that, not top of the league, not talking a top five defense or anything like that, but one that's middle of the road that you at least feel okay about, that you're not going to get shredded every time they step foot on the field. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility next year.
Right. And then how do you do that? Because, you know, another guy we never talk about in the free agent front, but Daquan Jones is a free agent. And I think Jeffrey Simmons on his rookie deal, I think he needs more help up there. So you could look at it and say, got to get that edge guy, you know, Ojulari from Georgia, whoever, right? But it's also like, I think you got to have more beef and disruption up front along with Jeffrey Simmons, which of course you lost with Jarrell Casey, by the way. You know, so I think you have to think about that too. And like, you got to ask the question, like Rashawn Evans. I mean, obviously he's not his rookie deal, but like, you know, that's a guy, like what's going on with him? You know, where is he going? You know, Landry has one more year on his rookie deal. I mean, to me, you know, you're probably picking up his option, but yeah, you've got to, certainly I think you got to look at the draft. You got to look around out there who you're spending on, but then who are you cutting? I mean, I look at this roster and I look at a guy like Adam Humphries. I mean, I would think there's a good chance he's not here next year. Again, do you go after, I mean, I still think I am not 100% convinced, you know, as great as Corey Davis has played this year, that you don't prioritize Jonnu Smith over him. Now, if you could have them both back, great. But again, you got to make some tough choices here. Jonnu Smith is a guy, again, he's been sort of taken out of the passing game here, but he is a special talent. So it's quite a puzzle, you know, for John Robinson. The bottom line is, if you don't have a great 2021 draft with multiple guys who are coming right in and mattering for you, then, you know, I don't know that you can keep it at this level. This team being 11-5 to me says it has a Super Bowl winning offense. And I believe that.
Yeah.
This is a Super Bowl winning offense, and it is a like 3-13 defense, and you can't have it.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Steve from the Borough texts in and says, I think that David Long has made Jayon Brown expendable. What do you guys think? Joe, what do you think about that? David Long coming in, has that made the Titans maybe more comfortable in losing Jayon Brown?
I thought coming into this year, and I think I actually wrote it for the year, that was one of those things to watch, is the, you know, the young reserve and the guy coming up on his deal. And I think that's possible. It's funny with David Long, again, Pro Football Focus, huge grain of salt, always say it, you know, that he hit his grade for the last game, my PFF was like 33.6, which is almost like impossible to be that bad.
Yeah.
So again, like, you know, these guys who were watching this film, like, they don't know every single assignment and play, but obviously he makes mistakes out there. He also is fast and aggressive and makes plays out there. So it's one of those things where if you can bring him along, you know, and because Jayon Brown, that's, you know, he had the green dot when he was out there. So, I mean, he's out there not just as a playmaker, but as a guy who understood the whole defense and, you know, a cerebral player. And so that's another thing that you have to consider with him versus, you know, like a David Long. But look, I mean, when you're talking about that kind of money, I mean, you have to make some choices like that. So I do think that's possible that, you know, that it's going to end up being the choice of going with Long and, you know, and letting Jayon go. I mean, you're going to have to let some people go.
David Long is more of a comparable to Jayon Brown than he is to Rashawn Evans. But the answer to that question could reside in how much do you trust Rashawn Evans moving forward?
I mean, yeah.
He's had ups and downs since he came into this league, and this season a lot more downs than ups. And Jayon Brown seems to be a player that is a little bit more consistent. You can trust a little bit more out there than Rashawn Evans right now. So if you trust Brown more than Evans, do you move on from Evans, sign Brown, and then have Brown and Long as your two linebackers?
Yeah, but he's on his rookie deal. I mean, you know, you'd really have to be down on him to go that route because you're not paying him that much right now, you know? Now, look,
sure,
look,
but in a year, are you going to be willing to, if you let Jayon Brown walk and have David Long basically take his place, all right, well, when Evans' deal is up, are you willing to let Evans walk and then have this hole to fill that you could have had filled by Jayon Brown?
Yeah. No, it's a fair point to bring up. I think with some of this too, it's like, man, Rashawn, got to have a better year. Yeah. You know, Kevin Byard, got to have a better year. You know, some of these guys, it's like, I know I've seen it before from you, so let's see it again. And some of it has to be that. But I suppose, you know, it's possible. If they love Jayon, I just don't know. You know, it's interesting in this league. Could you have a Jayon and Long combo in there? That's pretty light. You know, that's a lot of this league. I mean, a lot of it is can you cover tight ends? Can you cover slot guy at times? Rush the passer sometimes. Speed is the number one thing, but you also have to have some beef, right? In a 3-4 in your interior linebacker crew. So, but you're right. I mean, he's been a disappointing year for Evans, and that's a guy, that whole situation is one of many that you got to look at, and you got to make tough choices. On the outside, it's different. It's just like find anyone. And, you know, I think free agency and draft, you're going to have to do a lot. But if you're going to do something in free agency, that's another tough choice somewhere else.
Coming up next, we all know how much of a monster that Derrick Henry has been for the last couple of years for the Titans. How concerned are we about the workload that he's had moving forward? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, taking you through this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. To begin the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to take a look back. A little look back on Twitter, a little look back through the worlds of the interwebs, and just read some reactions when it came out that Ryan Tannehill had signed a 4-year deal, when Derrick Henry was signed to his contract. Some very interesting tweets and takes by a lot of people around the world of sports that look pretty bad right now based on the season that Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry just had. So looking forward to that conversation coming up at 7 o'clock. And speaking of Derrick Henry, we know what a monster he's been for the Titans the past couple of years. He just surpassed the 2,000-yard mark this year, 378 carries, 2,027 yards, and 17 touchdowns. And he is going to be obviously a huge piece of the Titans moving forward here in the playoffs. But are we starting to get concerned about what his long-term future could look like based on the workload that he's had? Again, I say 378 carries this year. That's a lot for an NFL running back in any era, much less today when you just don't see those numbers and that amount of carries for running backs very often anymore. And we've seen it happen before where running backs get, you know, they start to hover around the 350, 360, 370 mark of the carries. And they're just not the same next year. And Darren Donick and Chase were joined by a former running back yesterday of the Volunteers and the Baltimore Ravens who's got some experience in this matter. He was a 2,000-yard rusher, and I'm talking about Jamal Lewis, former Vol, former Raven, ran for 2,066 yards in 2003 and just had an incredible year that year, 387 carries in that campaign, and just was never able to quite get back to that level. He dropped off production-wise the next year, only had 1,006 yards rushing, only 235 carries in 12 games that following year. He was on Darren Donick and Chase yesterday and talked about the toll that having that amount of carries and that amount of workload can have on a running back for their long-term careers. Here's what Jamal Lewis had to say.
I can remember going into the playoff game that year. And I think it was against Tennessee.
It was against the Titans, yeah.
I can't remember going to that game, and I can tell you one thing. I was out of gas. I was out of gas. I hoped that the passing game would pick up or something, but I was honestly, I think I had over 380 or something like that.
Yeah, 387.
Maybe. Yeah, 387 carries, and I felt every single one of those going into that game.
So, Joe, as you look at what that could mean for Derrick Henry moving forward, obviously just turned 27 yesterday, so happy birthday, Derrick Henry. I don't get the vibe that he's slowing down. We've talked about it here on the show that it seems like as the season goes on, as he gets more carries, somehow he gets stronger. How concerned are we about the workload, though, at some point with Derrick Henry in the next few years catching up to him based on how often he's used in this Titans offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to think about it. I mean, so you got 378 this year. That's tied for 19th all time. And if you go through that list, you know, most of the guys at the top of the list are at least going back 15 years. And there's a lot of guys in the 80s. You do have, interestingly, you got DeMarco Murray with the 392 back in 2014 with the Cowboys. I mean, they leaned on him heavily, but that just doesn't happen much in this era. And it was very interesting hearing Jamal Lewis. By the way, with Jamal Lewis in 03, I don't know if you guys remember this, but, you know, he was going for the record, for Dickerson's record, the last night.
Yeah.
It was Sunday Night Football. And he didn't get it. And, of course, Dickerson lights up a cigar in celebration. It made me laugh when I saw Dickerson tweeted, like, congratulations to Henry. He's like, congratulations, and thank you for not breaking my record.
Right.
But that's interesting. I mean, look, it can happen. I mean, I think you got to think in those terms to some extent. I don't think you want to keep pushing this up. I mean, he's been pushing up and up and up steadily. I think you want to have a little bit more balance. And, again, I think when you draft a guy like Darrington Evans in the third round, it's not just to be a third down back, right? I mean, you want another guy in there to take some of the load off Derrick Henry. So that, I think that is the idea moving forward. If you have a good offseason for Darrington Evans and he is as good as you thought he was when you picked him in the third round, then I think right there next year you can see where, okay, you're going to give him a series here, a series there, and the overall bottom line will go down. But I will say this too. And again, I asked Derrick Henry how he's feeling. He got like mad the other day. Like I wasn't, you know, I think he's feeling fine. It's pretty obvious, but it's worth asking, you know, like how the heck are you feeling fine right now? You know, I mean, right now his durability is pretty amazing. You also, if you're the decision makers on this team, you want to do everything you can to not push it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Titans fans look at it as Henry's just built different, and I'm starting to think that maybe that's just the case and that he is built different, and he's just, you know, all these numbers you want to throw out with other guys of, you know, you have a certain amount of carries in one year, that affects you heading into the next year, and you're just not going to be quite as productive. Maybe that is the case with Henry, but it just doesn't feel that way right now. Like, I'm not saying he's going to run for 2,000 yards next year, but that guy looks like he's at the top of his game and it's not going anywhere for the foreseeable future. So I hear Titans fans from that point of view, but I do think if you're starting to talk about, you know, forecasting 2, 3, 4 years down the road and you're still wanting Derrick Henry to be maybe not quite at this level, but an upper echelon running back in the National Football League, you do have to keep this in mind if you're the Titans, because I get it. He's big. He delivers a lot of punishment. He rarely gets rocked on a play where you're just like, man, Derrick Henry just got smoked. Like, I don't even remember a time this year where that happened, where Derrick Henry gets the worst of the hit. It doesn't happen very often. But even though you're the one doling out the contact and dishing it out most of the time, that does have an effect on you over time. So that is something I think they need to be cognizant of. But quite frankly, based on what I've seen out of him the last few years, the next year or two about Derrick Henry, I'm just not worried about right now, because – everything tells me that this guy is just built differently and that he is able somehow to not only sustain the hits that he takes, but like I said, it seems like he gets stronger as the year goes on.
I completely agree with you, Robbie. The one thing that I do worry about, just looking at trends of the 2,000-yard rushers over the years, is that the next season they don't just go from 2,000 to 1,900,
right,
or 2,000 to 1,700. Most of them go from 2,000 yards to 1,100, 1,200, maybe 1,300. Terrell Davis got hurt and was never the same after that. Obviously not saying that would happen to Derrick Henry, but I do worry about a pretty steep drop-off in terms of the amount of yards next season.
Yeah, and I think that's all situational too, and I don't know all – I do know, like, you know, like with Barry Sanders, they changed the offense and brought in – I'm going to forget his name from Georgia Tech, Bobby Ross, you know, and so that was actually part of why he retired too. So, I mean, he had several more years of like being that kind of back if he wanted it, you know, so it's not always but it is interesting. Like, you wonder, is it just, it takes so much out of you that they're just naturally some kind of a letdown effect the next year. You know, it's this is not like in this is not something that most teams in the NFL even think about anymore, right? I mean, like I look at the attempts this year. I mean, across the league, most teams split things up in the backfield to the extent that it's not even a big deal. I mean, there's nine guys or there's 10 guys who even had 200 carries. You know, Aaron Jones is 10th at 201. Dalvin Cook did have 312. So there's two guys above 300. And then it's, you know, you get into the next guy after that is Josh Jacobs, 273. So, I mean, you're talking number three is more than 100 carries fewer than Derrick Henry. So it's a big, and I do think that, like, this is not like, I think in baseball, it's gone too far a little bit with the pitch count, you know, that's so devoted to that now. And I think back to when starters used to, you know, throw 140 pitches and no one blinked and they were fine. But I understand that too. In this case, I guess I would look at it like if you could keep them around 300, which is a little less than 20 per game, you know, then I think if he's healthy and looking the same, and then you can still obviously get a lot out of him and he can have big numbers, but maybe as a long-term thought, you know, a little bit less than 20 per game. So you have some games where he takes a little bit of a break. I think that might be the way. And I have no idea if the Titans do that, but I mean, someone should be tracking all this stuff, you know, and that just seems like a reasonable place. I don't think you want him pushing 400 too many more times in his career.
When we come back, we're going to have a little bit of fun. We look back to the signings of Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, the reaction around the league on Twitter to those signings. There are some doozies of some hot takes out there. We'll have those for you when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.